This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 427, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 427. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Paul Montgomery.
Hey there.
And joining us in lieu of new daddy Josh Flanagan is Ali Coluccio.
Bonjour.
I hear you are more Scotch than woman these days.
I am. There was a little bit of blood in my alcohol system, so I had to grab another drink.
Ali just got back from Scotland and brought some booze back with her.
A lot.
Mostly in her bloodstream.
My homeland.
But Josh, you may or may not know if you are on social media, he is not here because he unexpectedly early had another son. Well, his wife did. He just sort of stood around and didn't do anything. But his wife bore him Henry Jack Flanagan. So congratulations to Josh, to his wife Lindsay, to their son Oliver, to the dog George, Looney the dog. And we're happy for all of them. And Josh,
everything went really well, apparently.
Went really well. Everyone's healthy and happy. The baby looks very suspicious in all of his photos, which I love. And
Josh is apparently crying constantly, and
he may or may not be back next week. We have no idea. So
he'll be a changed man. No more cynicism. He's like Ebenezer Scrooge at the end of A Christmas Carol, and buying everybody the biggest turkey in the store. And
what's funny, a little behind the scenes, is that after last week's show, we had a little meeting about upcoming scheduling because the baby was, of course, expected in the next month, and Josh was like, but we don't have to worry about it for a while. It's going to be fine. And then the Monday after that, I got a text message as I'm driving saying, the baby's coming right now. And so here we are. So thank you, Ali, for stepping in. You're a lovely and gracious host.
Thank you for having me.
And as a way of explanation, we are a fanboy and we like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best comic they read. We talk about it in the show, along with the other books of the week. Other topics of interest, some audience questions. It's a fun, happy time, and hopefully nobody gives birth on during the show, although that'd be awesome for
I can't make any promises.
Listeners.
I've still got at least 4 minutes between my contractions.
Oh, perfect. We'll try to get going then. Before we get to the show, though, a quick reminder and warning, it's a review show, so there'll be some spoilers. If you haven't read your book, please come back and after you're done so you're not angry about getting spoiled and we don't have to hear read your emails and hear your voicemails and things like that. Paul, you had the pick.
Yeah, I went with the Batman 29. It's part of the New 52. I'm just looking at the cover here. This is what in France they would refer to as one of them tour de forces. This was a big blockbuster of a comic. I have been enjoying Zero Year so far, although I did enjoy that little brief intermission we had last month.
The flash forward.
Yeah, we got to see the flash forward and the return of spoiler. Spoiler alert, sorry. But this is the sort of the end of, I guess, act two of Zero Year.
And I think that's probably fair.
Yeah. It's the end. It's broken. And I think the story is broken into three parts, and this is the Dark City part of it with, Dr. Death, who was just creepy as hell. And I think this one, you know, there were a lot of good books this week, but the creative team on this book was just pushing the envelope. Like, I think everybody was just firing on all cylinders, and colors in here are amazing. I think this is some of Greg Capullo's best work on the book.
Yeah.
It's just really, really strong. And as Allie pointed out on the social media, there's dirigibles. And
There are several dirigibles.
I applaud Gotham's commitment to the dirigible, up to including the logo for the new Gotham TV show has them in the background.
Yeah.
So you got to appreciate that. But this was the issue, Paul, we've been talking about waiting for. You know,
yeah.
This was a Riddler story. We knew Zero Year was a Riddler story. And Riddler's been there in the background. He, you know, the blackouts happened, but we've been waiting for him to really cause the trouble that would lead to the thing that opened the story up, which was Batman on a steam bike with Gotham having returned to the Savage Land in a way. And here's
flooded
where it happens.
Subways and yeah.
Here's where it happens, where the Riddler's plan put into place, and he ends up blowing up the retaining walls just as Hurricane Irene or Renee.
Yeah.
Hurricane Irene's a real thing. Hurricane Renee, Superstorm Renee. You're right. Hits Gotham, beginning the flood of the city, which we assume will lead to chaos and horses becoming more popular again. But you're right. This is the issue we waited for, and I loved it. I loved, especially the end sequence that was mostly silent.
Oh yeah,
which I thought was just wonderful.
You get. I mean, we've gone back to that well of Crime Alley time and time again. But this one, there was this great human element to it where instead of feeling like these archetypes, you know, like Mary and Joseph or something, Bruce's parents feel like real people. Mm-hmm. And Dad cares about, you know, his favorite movie. He loves the Zorro movie.
That opening scene was fantastic.
It really is. That opening page and that chilling poster for the Gotham GCPD. Don't be afraid, join us. It's pretty scary. But there's this Norman Rockwell quality to seeing them on the bench and Bruce's legs, his feet not even reaching the floor. And we revisit that at the end where Batman really feels that he's failed Gotham City. And this is Batman just starting out with the purple gloves and everything. And he and I think Gordon both feel like, man, I screwed up. This just went way too far. And
well, they completely underestimated the Riddler. They completely underestimated his plans. Even though Batman had an inkling and by the end has figured out the real plan, he's powerless to stop it. And I love, there was two moments that got me. The first was as Batman's fighting Dr. Death to prevent the Riddler's plan from happening, which is taking over the power grid. He's got a little device that's going to help him, and Dr. Death knocks it out of his hand and goes skittering off the edge of this tower and falls away. And that's the moment Batman realizes it's over. And it was the quiet no. Like, he screams no when it first falls, and then there's another panel where he just sort of says it very quietly, and that's sort of the moment where you can tell he knows there's no coming back now. And then, of course, the end sequence in which we cut between the murder of his parents and the walls being blown and the city getting flooded. Batman, you know, in anger and rage, just pounding on the console, powerless to stop it. His two greatest failures up to this point happening intertwined on all silent. I thought it was just amazing.
This was just, I thought, so cinematic and huge. Just the reveal of the bat blimp. And I like him. I like the interaction between him and Alfred. And basically Alfred's like, a blimp, really? And he's like, you know, it was, it already came in black. You know, I like that sort of thing, but it just feels like such a great reveal when you see that huge blimp.
And it's the goddamn Batman.
And it's the goddamn Batman with the sensor. And when you first see Dr. Death in all his bony glory, just gruesome and incredible. You know, the movies figured out that, you know, you sort of want one sort of cerebral villain and then one kind of heavy sort of villain. And they've used that to, you know, good or ill in some cases with the movies. But I think it's a formula that works a lot with the bigger Batman stories. And I think it works here. So you have the Riddler as sort of the man behind the scenes. And then even though Dr. Helfern is, you know, a world-class mind, he's warped and he becomes sort of a clayface-like monster. Mm-hmm. And you also get to see in his interaction with Batman just how much of a loose cannon young Batman is. Like, he just rips that one node off of his head and uses it to slam at the console. And it's just so matter of fact, he just rips it right off.
Right.
And if there's I think one critique of the issue, it would be Dr. Death's sort of soliloquy.
A little long.
About Tokyo Moon. It's just considering how tense that moment is, it's a little bit verbose. But other than that, I thought it was a great script, and some of their best work, colors, inks, and these layouts are just incredible. So
Ali, you haven't really read this whole series, this whole story, but you jumped on for this issue for the show. What did you think of it, having not really read the back story?
I was a little bit worried because I knew this was kind of like smack in the middle of everything. But you know, I like to just jump in. And it was everything that I really like about Snyder and Capullo's Batman. Mm-hmm. I really loved it in the beginning, and then it just kind of felt like it was getting too decompressed for me. And, you know, I had a lot of books and I was cutting down, and it was a tough decision that I kind of stopped picking this up. And so I'm really glad that I picked it up, because it reminded me of why I love this book and why I was picking it up every month.
Yeah.
So I might have to go back in and fill in what was going on before.
Or at the very least, go forward with this. I think now that we get to the part of the story where I assume we're going to flash forward and Gotham is going to be in a whole different place that we've ever seen before, it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, and you know, I really liked the way that Snyder handled the Joker in that previous arc. But here, I think the Riddler is sort of the perfect mm-hmm. rogue for him. Just the love of puzzles, and you know, he set up some really great mechanisms for him. I love the big boulder, you know, hanging mm-hmm. by a string, and that's a good reminder. You know, I love Batman Year One, and a lot of that is because of Jim Gordon, and Jim Gordon plays a really big role here as well, and just how he cannot get anything done in this police department. No one is going to help him out, so. I'm excited to see where Gordon's story takes us as well.
Man, I really love that jump from the blimp. If you talk about cinematic, mm-hmm. I don't know if I can make it. If I jump far enough, I can. And there's that one-page shot of the lightning, a very Dark Knight Returns-esque, of him jumping with the lightning in the background, fully silhouetted. And then even the next panel with him shooting the grappling hook.
Oh, yeah.
I loved just a great – Capullo is a monster.
Just a tense action sequence high up in the air. And the rain, it's sort of everything. It's just a perfect storm,
yep.
Literally. And you're right about that final sequence. That shot of the gun with the bullet leaving the gun, you can just sort of feel everything going in slow motion. Everything is going wrong.
Right.
And he's thinking about the worst.
He can't, it's just, he can't do anything. He can see it slipping away. He can't do anything about it. And for a guy like Batman, that's the worst possible thing that can happen.
I loved the issue, but then that final sequence was just sort of the exclamation point on everything.
And, right.
I was like, no, this is the pick.
So another week, another Image number one. This time a little different. It's the Stray Bullets Killers number one, which is the second volume of the famous Stray Bullets series from David Lapham, who writes and draws. And this was something he did for a long, very big indie book they published for a long time by himself. And now he's moved over to Image. And I had never read Stray Bullets before.
I hadn't either.
But we used to talk about it regularly on the show. Josh and Ron were big fans of it. But they used to talk about how bleak and nihilistic it was. And so I sort of stayed away from that. Although I do love crime stories, which is basically what these are. But I figured, what the hell, this is a new volume, new era. Check it out. And pretty bleak.
It's pretty bleak. This was
that sounds about right.
For a story that opens up with kids talking about seeing boobs, and I'll draw you a picture of them, and like they're clamoring, you know, draw me one, and it's like they're pretty easy, you know. And it's like, have you touched one? No, I've just sort of seen them. I can draw them though, and you know, and for it to end with a brutal sequence of an intentional car crash, and then.
Murder.
The boy dying, dad getting his throat slit upside down by these killers.
His eyes cut out. This is a mutilation.
You snubbed them out.
Yeah.
This was pretty dire.
That was not where I've turned the page and I was like, that escalated quickly.
Yeah. That's what I love about it though. This was very close to being the pick. But it was one of those weird situations where it's like it was a total apples and oranges thing.
Sure.
I feel like any other week this might have been the pick, but I'm really excited about this moving forward and going back and reading from 1995 on those, 42 issues.
Yeah.
Of Stray
so
Bullets.
Basically, let's just give a brief overview. So the story, as you said, it's a young boy who has discovered his father's strip club addiction by sneaking out with him in the back of his car, then somehow sneaking very, very super spy-esque sneaking into the strip club.
He's like going through vents and stuff. I was like, wow.
Really wanted to see those boobs. Watching the strippers and seeing his father go off and get lap dances while his mother is working, and discovers that and meets some characters along the way, including what's his name? Scotty.
Yeah.
Long haired, mustache, cool guy who likes Star Wars and also is the muscle for the strip club, apparently.
I like that where he and the kid commiserate over liking Star Wars more than Star Trek, which is what the dad likes. And
right, because this takes place in 1978.
Yeah.
And we find out, of course, that one of the young kid's friends, his older sister, has been secretly dancing. Father becomes obsessed with her and apparently murders her. It's very heavily implied. But we assume that's what happened. He ends up murdering her. Scotty, of course, was dating her at one point, so he gets mad and as revenge, kills the father and accidentally kills the son in the process. Although he doesn't seem to really care that he killed the son, but yeah, woo.
It's such
happy fun times all around.
I love crime though, and it's great when you discover something that has such a rich history so that you can actually go back and you don't have to wait. I mean, I'll be excited for issue 2 and 3 and whatever to come out of this, but I can go back and look at the existing Stray Bullets that are just waiting there for me. Mm-hmm. So I love when you find things like that. There's this treasure trove of stuff that's already in existence and readily available.
Allie, will you be staying on Stray Bullets killers?
Crime is not really my jam all the time.
Crime boy, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it's a fantastic comic. Like I appreciate the talent behind it, and it's
definitely not for everybody.
It's great comic booking and graphic storytelling.
But it's also just, graphic storytelling.
It's also graphic, and it's not so much the graphic as the bleak,
mm-hmm.
nihilistic kind of thing.
It's like Stand By Me if they all
murdered
in the grisly way. Yeah. But it's just sort of that vibe, I think. It's like sort of coming of age.
Yeah.
I like the surprise. I liked turning that page and went, whoa, this is, this book isn't about who I thought it was about.
I will probably read the next one. I mean, I did like it. I do like crime stories. If they're all like super bummers at the end, though, I might just, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I'm not quite sure. It was rough. It was rough.
It was. I mean, and it's definitely the book of all of the books that I read this week that I had the biggest reaction to.
Which is good.
Which is good. I don't know if I want to have that reaction every month.
The kid just wanted to see some boobs, and he ended up
exactly.
dying.
We were all talking about boobs. It was really great.
Better ways. Oh, poor kid. Never even got to touch one. Captain Marvel number one.
Captain Marvel number one. This is interesting because Marvel is owned by Disney, which now also owns the Star Wars, and this feels very Star Wars. Like we even see some Muff Tack in here from the Mos Eisley Cantina.
This is not Miss Marvel.
No, right? this is Captain Marvel.
This is Captain Marvel.
It's a new number one. It's a new jumping on point, but basically it's the continuing story and. This is Carol decides that she's living in the Statue of Liberty, which I love. That's her new apartment.
Yes.
She's living in the crown of the Statue of Liberty. And she's dating Rhodey. And yep. They sort of have a really fun relationship where both thinks they're, a better pilot than the other. And so that's a great dynamic. And Tony basically sets it up for her to go into outer space to return this girl who's basically a refugee after Infinity because a lot of planets were destroyed in that, that wave. Yeah.
That's why.
So we're going to go.
I didn't need that. I was just like, random chick in a space capsule.
So we're going to take her back to space. So we're going on a space adventure. And so it's fun to have. I enjoyed Infinity. I love the scope of it. I love space opera. If there was one thing that was missing from Infinity, it was sort of the more character-oriented stuff. And you definitely get a lot of character with what Kelly Sue DeConnick's doing with this character.
I think.
And the extended cast.
Because I know Marvel kind of has this, like, almost seasons approach to the books that they're doing. And so, like, this feels like a good season two opener.
Mm-hmm.
This is consistently one of my favorite books. And I just love Carol and her New York neighborhood. And, you know, she's best friends with Jessica and she's got Kit and Kit's mom.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the strongest parts of this book and from the previous volume is her extended cast.
Yeah.
There's a real focus on that and what they contribute, you know, to her as a, it's not a team book. She's still a solo star. But they contribute a lot to her mission statement.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens without that same support system that she's had, particularly after the whole amnesia-y thing that she's going through.
Yeah. And I would recommend going back and checking out volume one, but also if you've ever been curious, you can check out this new number one and you'll be fine. It pretty much explains everything. And we're going on a space adventure. We're going to a marketplace in outer space and getting in trouble and some Star Wars-y looking goodness. Seriously, I think there are some aliens that are like directly from Mos Eisley or the Boom to Eve classic.
There are a couple that do definitely look like that.
Mm-hmm. So Superman Wonder Woman number 6. Allie, you're known as Wonder Allie. You're a big Wonder Woman fan. How do you feel about this relationship between these two? And this is, I mean, that's the sort of the center point of this issue in particular. Why are they a couple?
Why are they a couple? Yeah. Superman and Wonder Woman aren't exactly a couple that I've ever really been particularly interested in as a romantic couple. But I do love superhero comic books and I do love relationship-y comic books. And I do love Wonder Woman and I do love Superman. So,
you're at odds.
Yeah.
I know. It's weird. Well, I'm sorry. I'm very big on Superman and Lois. Like,
know what's interesting?
They'll always be my OTP, to use a phrase from fandom.
Yeah.
It's interesting because we talked about in the past how, you know, DC doesn't seem to want them to go Superman together. But if you go back and, like, watch the Superman the Animated Series, they were not even really a couple in that either. I remember when I did my write-up on the show for iFanboy.com, you know, there's like no romantic tension between them whatsoever. It's just interesting that it keeps popping up like that, and I wonder why. But I'd say if you're going to do it, at least make it interesting. And so far I find this book to be fun, mostly because I think Charles Soule is a really good writer.
Yeah, and I'm kind of exactly where you are with it. It's a fun book. It might not be my favorite book that I'm reading, but I like it. And he's a really good writer. I like their back and forth.
It's a really tricky book to talk about because I think his portrayal of either character is pretty strong. I think his Wonder Woman in particular is really
He could write either one of their solo books.
I think so too.
Yeah, and I think he's...
It's just sort of a flawed premise of those two together. I think I just don't buy it.
It's a very New 52 book. And yeah. I realize that might sound snarky and I don't necessarily mean it to, but it very much is.
There's definitely a New 52 feeling and a New 52 formula out there. And this is one of the books that has it.
Right. But. It's New 52 Batman. It's New 52 Wonder Woman.
But given all of those things.
And that's fine. Given all of those things, I'm still enjoying this book.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, I've made peace with the fact after JMS's run and reading that whole thing that I do not need to read a Wonder Woman book if I'm not enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm enjoying this. I mean, it has, there are points where I'm like, what are you doing? Like, not to spoil things, but there is a giant nuclear explosion at the end of this issue.
Well, this is the big throwdown between Superman, Wonder Woman, and Zod, and Feyora, which
has been amazing and fantastic. I just feel like maybe they might be a little bit concerned about collateral damage to the Pacific Northwest.
Right,
there's Superman's got a collateral damage problem of the past couple of years.
They, in order to stop them, they take Wonder Woman's mystical sword and they split an atom with it, which I thought was pretty cool. And to
it was cool, and they, I like that they do it together. I like the moment
he can see the atom, like he has that microscopic vision, so he can see the atom. She has the force and the artifact to slice through it. So together, by your powers combined,
the Wonder
will blow up a planet.
It will blow up the planet, and it will be epic. But I like their back and forth. I like the way Charles Soule writes that. I like that. I guess it's two issues before this. They have the big, huge fight about, you know, Superman being Clark Kent and having that whole separate life, and right. Wonder Woman not knowing how to deal with it or how she fits in with that. Or
right.
That's what I mean. About she doesn't have time for that.
Yeah, no, she doesn't. I mean, she's got a weapon called the lasso.
That is bullshit.
She doesn't have time for that. But my absolute favorite thing, the one that made me run directly to Twitter as I was reading this issue, was the invisible chariot.
Mm.
Because I always love the invisible jet, no matter how ridiculous it is. I think I love it because it doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So a chariot, kind of makes more sense with the whole Greek thing.
Right.
It's also more, it's more cohesive in terms, like it's bringing in these disparate parts of her mythology and actually making it part of the Greek, you know, hierarchy, you know.
And I like the commitment that DC has to keeping Superman in the most ridiculous outfits possible at all times. In this issue, Wonder Woman and Superman don a special costumes to prevent. What is it for again? I forget.
I don't. I think it's the suits that like actually like they're like a kinetic energy thingy because basically it absorbs all of the hits.
Yeah.
Right.
From Zod and Feyora, and then they hold hands. And I love that they kind of make fun of how cheesy it is. Mm-hmm. And they hold hands, and then the suit backfires all of the energy that it's absorbed.
Right. They just look dumb.
And I think we got to mention the exchange, you know, where Superman says, I love you. And she says, of course you do. I like that more because I like a Wonder Woman who says that.
Well, because she has more of an edge, and she always has had more of an edge than Superman does.
Yeah. So I don't necessarily buy Superman saying, I love you to Wonder Woman, but she's certainly worth loving. But I don't know that they have the chemistry.
I think the original sin of this whole thing is that we don't know Superman's character, who he is, or why he does anything.
Yeah.
So that's really, I mean, talk about flawed premise. That's for me. I don't know.
I'm more willing to buy the Lana thing over an Action Comics. Or
yes. I think they make a much better couple.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're a couple over there, but they're, you know what I'm saying?
It's a will they or won't they kind of thing.
Paul.
So, yeah.
Secret Avengers number one, which is the reboot of Secret Avengers, obviously, but it's Alice Cott who had been co-writing the previous Secret Avengers and is the writer over on Zero and Image, solo writing this one. Anyway, Paul, what did you think? Because I had a lot of conflicting thoughts about this. The artist is Michael Walsh.
Mm-hmm. Well,
some colors who we all love.
Coulson. I used to say more Coulson is always a good thing. Then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came on the air, and I don't know. I love Coulson on that show. What I've watched of it, but what are your conflicts?
Well, so this team is the Secret Avengers, as the title suggests. They are the ones who do the covert operations, and it includes Hawkeye, who's, I do like the fact that he's on the team, but not, like, they don't want him on the team, but he's always around.
They don't want him on the team, but he keeps showing up.
Right, Black Widow, Spider-Woman, and then fake Nick Fury and Agent Phil Coulson, and also this issue we've had the addition of MODOK, who in the last series had become, they had, S.H.I.E.L.D. had brought him into the fold. And it's all run by Director Hill. And I thought the art was fantastic. I didn't know.
Yeah, the art and the colors on this were really great.
I was not expecting that when I opened it up. It's like, oh, this is interesting. It seems to borrow heavily from the Hawkeye vibe, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. It at times felt a little too precious, but I did enjoy lots of pieces of it. I enjoyed Black Widow and Spider-Woman's day out at the spa until Hawkeye crashes it, and then AIM crashes it behind Hawkeye. I like that whole interaction, but I felt at times that we veered a little too closely towards, you know, the look how awesome I am vibe, which can get in the way of some of those stories.
We don't have it on the script this week, but are you reading Superior Foes of Spider-Man yet?
No, I have them all. I just haven't read them yet.
It's which is interesting because he was writing the first arc of this.
Nick Spencer.
Yeah.
He co-wrote the last arc with Alcott, yeah.
But this you know, new volume is, I feel like, such a departure from what Secret Avengers originally was. Not the setup, but the tone, the whole vibe of it.
Yeah, the tone is very, very different from what I remember.
But it seems like this is a little bit closer to what Superior Foes of Spider-Man is, but I feel like that's a little bit more successful in terms of the humor.
Right.
And it's at first I was like, that's, I thought it was really trying, it was, you know, aping the Hawkeye thing. But then it came into its own, and it's quite honestly, that was sort of my number three book this week, Superior Foes.
Right.
You got to get caught up on that.
I think the thing about Secret Avengers that I mean, it is kind of its own thing, but it's using Hawkeye and Black Widow and Spider-Woman, and they've all kind of been very much in Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you've got a style that is really similar and borrowing some of the same gags, on top of having those same characters, there were moments that felt like it was trying to be Hawkeye.
Like it begs the comparison. And
right.
It's,
like,
you know, not quite there.
Like there's a whole scene where they're in a Russian bathhouse, and so everybody is fighting either in towels or without towels because
right.
Clint. And there's the gag with the classic Hawkeye over Hawkeye's little Hawkeye.
Right.
And then they repeat the same thing with Spider-Woman where she has a potential boob slip.
Right.
And it just felt, I was like, really?
It's a fine line.
Really?
That's a tricky thing to get right, that kind of comedy.
I mean, it was the comedy beats.
Especially in a collaborative medium.
Right. Like And it worked well for what it was, but it was a gag that I'd seen somewhere else with the same people.
Right. Yeah, I get that. That's where the sort of comparison comes from. Although I do like that there's this corner of the Marvel Universe where the tone is like this with Hawkeye, this book, and I guess Superior Foes also.
Mm-hmm.
This is very irreverent, and the art style is very not what you'd expect. So I do like that. And I'm willing to give this a couple more goes to see if it sort of settles down into its own groove, and it can still, this tone can stay as long as, you know, it just felt like it was trying very, very hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
to be irreverent, and which is fine, you can have funny books, but I did like the audacity of it. I did like the art a lot. I do like these characters together. I think it's always fun when Hawkeye is on a team with all of his ex-girlfriends. So we'll see. I was just very surprised by it. A very different art style. I mean, I love the Tradmore cover, but doesn't really give you an indication what you're in for.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it was definitely a fun surprise when you opened it, and I did like it. Like I didn't
dislike it at all. It just felt at times like it made me wince a few times, but you know, I'm willing to give it some more trouble or more issues to get to trouble. I don't know what I'm saying.
It just needs to find its feet, I think.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I'm trying to say. Feet trouble. They're all the same. Paul mentions Superior Foes of Spider-Man. I know the first volume is out, so if you want to check that out, go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find a link to Amazon.com where you can make your purchases. Gives us a small percentage of that purchase, which comes out of Amazon's pocket and not yours, and it helps the show, helps us keep in new equipment and run everything, keep the website going, everything that we need to do to keep iFanboy alive, and really, we really appreciate that. You can also help us directly by going to ifanboy.com/registration. And for $3 a month or $30 a year, or you can donate any amount you want, you can help us directly and not have to make anything purchased from Amazon, because they just upped their Prime fee to $99. So maybe you don't want to do that. You can just go to ifanboy.com/registration directly and help. So we appreciate that, every one of you. We
appreciate that.
You're the ones we talk about at the very top of the show, who the show is supported by. So everyone who does that, we thank you. And now
we're gonna need that this year, because St. Patrick's Day is coming up, and Connor's gonna accidentally drink the toner again. We're gonna need to get back.
Toner is so delicious. The Royals, the Masters of War number 2, Paul. We loved this first issue. Came out last month, and sure, it was about the superpowered royal bloodlines in the various countries around World War II. And was this the same artist this time?
I don't know.
It was much more.
Simon Colby is this issue.
That is the same artist. It seemed much more photo referencey this time than the last one.
It did. And I
understand, because it's historical figures in it, but also, you know,
it has that thing where you're trying to get a likeness of an historic figure, and sometimes you're really on, and then sometimes not so much. They look like they got punched in the face a bunch of times.
Yeah, I mean,
so you got Winston Churchill,
and he's great. But then there's one panel where he looks exactly like an actor who played Winston Churchill in a movie, but who's not.
We got FDR in here.
Image search.
Well, that's the other thing. So Churchill's like dead on for a lot of it, but FDR looks nothing like FDR for the entire issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's just the kind of thing that gets in the way of when you're photo referencing. One guy looks exactly right, the other guy looks exactly wrong. It takes me out of the story, because I'm trying to figure out what happened. Did he not photo reference FDR at all? And you know, it just becomes problematic. But
exactly.
This issue, the Japanese entered the story.
And the Americans, we get to see the Allies. So
they were adorable.
I love the whole conceit of this book. This is just a fun idea. I think it's just one of those winning pitches. And I think other than the art hiccups in this issue, I think we're onto something really cool.
Right. No, I do love the story. I think the story's great.
But this is sort of one of those hidden gems that I haven't heard people talking about, and I think they should.
This is a 6-issue mini, according to the cover now. But
I think maybe when it comes out in trade, it'll pop up more.
Right. So we have the jealous prince who is does not like what's going on. He's a very grumpy mustache.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of causes lots of trouble in this issue. And then the Japanese emperor comes and...
You're in love with your own sister, man.
Awkward. So, yeah.
To which Winston Churchill goes, Christ almighty. Really quiet.
Like, again?
So speaking of Hawkeye, Hawkeye 17 came out. And yeah.
I was going through, this is going to be divisive.
I thought this was very self-indulgent.
Yeah.
And I did not enjoy it.
So the conceit of this, we have, it's David Aja as bookends, right? And it's Clint is watching with his neighbors. He's watching a Christmas special. And they acknowledge in the editor's notes in the back that, yeah, this one was a little late. So, you know, the combination of the issue being very delayed and just not timely at all. Plus, it's a really... esoteric kind of idea.
And the art was great. Chris Eliopoulos got to draw the Christmas special art, which took place over all but 2 pages of the issue, and that was fine. I just didn't care. I don't know why.
They're trying for this metaphor, right? That Hawkeye is Steve the dog.
Oh, I got that. It's just,
yeah,
you know, like,
but
it doesn't,
they're,
you know,
mixing too many metaphors. Like, this Christmas special is like it's a multi-denominational.
Right.
You know, it's every different religion are different animal mascots in this Christmas special, and it doesn't feel like it's aping any one Christmas special, you know. So it's not a one to one kind of analog kind of thing.
Well, yeah. I talked before about that tone being the danger of it being too precious. This is what I was talking about.
Yeah,
this is it veering off the table.
But what I mean is that, so I get the idea, like, he's daydreaming and he's doubting himself. I also don't know how it exactly connects to the previous issue of Hawkeye.
Doesn't, not in any way.
And yeah, which ends on a huge cliffhanger. So it's
right.
Like, what is this?
I know. I kind
it's,
of
it's kind of like a filler to get back on schedule.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, but when I opened this one up, I was really annoyed. Because not only is it not, you know, picking up where the last issue that I read, which was like giant cliffhanger,
right,
dropped off, but this, it felt like this was a Christmas issue that they wrote not for this Christmas, the Christmas before, mm-hmm, and then scrapped it because they did the Sandy issues.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, and again, and it's coming out in March, so it's not really near a holiday. It just, it felt like an afterthought.
It's this island of misfit toys issue kind of thing where, you know, where it do you is belong? And
like, I don't need
very
every
bad timing.
I don't need every holiday story to be out in the holidays, but if it does, then it needs to be interesting and say something. And I don't think it had anything to say.
I mean, it's the other thing too. It's a great insight into Clint's issues and his psyche and his character, but we know all of this.
Right.
It doesn't move his character along. It doesn't tell us anything new.
Yeah, it's belaboring the point.
Right. And I think for it to come out now, it only highlights that it's belaboring the point. Like, I normally love an issue like this around Christmas.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, if this came out when I think it probably was written, I think I would have thought it was adorable.
Right.
Or manorable.
There's some clever stuff in there, but you know.
But yeah, like it just.
I'd rather they just not put the issue out and just. I'll wait 2 months for the next issue. I'd rather they just do that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Avengers Undercover number one. I wanted to highlight this simply because I didn't want anybody to miss it because of the title change. But this is actually the next issue of Avengers Arena. It's the aftermath of the kids getting out of Mirror World, and the world finding out what happened. And all the fallout, and it basically was an entire issue of PTSD, kids going through PTSD. And I thought it was really good. Again, yeah. I mean, first, we loved Avengers Arena. It's the same creative team. It's Dennis Hopeless on writing and Kev Walker on the art. And, you know, picks up right where left off, basically, in terms of the quality. And
Kev Walker's wonderful. Yeah. And so is Dennis Hopeless. I love this, the whole conceit of it's this overarching story. And like you said, this is sort of chapter two. And if there's one downside to this, it's because it's a new number one issue, there's a lot of exposition here explaining, you know, sort right of what happened and just setting. And you're also doing this little jump because everyone's moved on to, you know, another status quo. So maybe Chase's new design is a little weird.
Yeah. I mean, Chase
it's
is a
little
dick,
anachronistic.
Yeah.
No, I mean the look. He's got this like mohawk, faux hawk thing, and it doesn't feel entirely timely. Although Chase is a little lame himself, so I think trying to be kind of cool would be able to pull it off. So maybe
there's some interesting things to say about, you know, reality television and celebrity and how they sort of become reality TV stars out of this, even though it's a horrible thing that happened. People treat them as if it's a TV show they watched. You know, even that one guy even called it a webisode.
Yeah, with the hazmat vignette, basically that's what it is, a bunch of vignettes, up until they meet up towards the end of the issue. The guy is basically, you know, sort of armchair quarterbacking it, saying, you know, what he would have done, you know, instead of hazmat making the most mistakes, and she was awful. And it's sort of like the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back thing, like you're there, right, you overhear them, and so you and so she lays out some toxic waste basically and confronts him on it.
I feel like it was a little bit of you know, getting back at people. There was even a mention in the lair that had not only the mystery of where Arcade was, but also the list of people that were dicks to them online. And this was a very controversial book that had a lot of people being dicks to them online. I'm in it, so I wonder if there was a little bit of meta commentary there. But Hopeless even mentioned it in his little essay in the back, how he was not prepared for the backlash. But I you know, it's great. If you liked Avengers Arena, please continue with this book. It was really,
I think, really my favorite scene and my favorite character is the Death Locket bit, where this scientist that's working on her says, you know, you were my favorite and I liked all the choices you made. You were sort of the hero of the whole thing. She's like, I killed my best friend. What is wrong with you?
Right.
You know,
it's totally the nature of celebrity, you know, the modern age. It was good. Really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Nightwing 29 was the final issue of that series because Nightwing was killed in the last issue of Forever Evil, which no one talked about.
Is that what happened? I read Forever Evil.
Wait, what?
Last week. Yeah.
Again, no. If an event falls in the woods and no one makes a sound, does it actually happen? But yeah.
I read that issue.
Smothered Nightwing in that issue and he died. And
incomprehensible. I got the feeling that he died. Like right. That's what was happening. But I thought the storytelling was so muddled in that I wasn't sure. So I didn't read this, but what happened?
It wrapped up the storyline he's been having on his own in Chicago, and I thought this book was really good up until he went to Chicago, and it kind of got really uninteresting for a long time. But I thought this issue was a really, really nice wrap up to that story, to Nightwing. I don't want to say wrap up to his character because he doesn't die in this issue, but he sort of flies, you know, swings off into the sunset in this issue. I'm assuming he's not really going to be dead for very long, and or really dead at all. But this was a way to wrap the series up. I'm sure they can reboot it with new number one, new creative team if they decide he's not dead. But if you're a fan of Nightwing, this was really one of the stronger issues of the whole series. And I enjoyed it quite a bit. But yeah, I mean, you can tell how irrelevant the whole comic book death thing has become, in that I'm not even upset that they killed off my second favorite character. So whatever.
It's also just been that shoe waiting to drop because...
Right. Dan DiDio has been gunning for him for years. And
gunning for him, exactly.
And
open season on Dick Grayson.
Forever Evil isn't over. He may or may not come back in the next issue. Anything can happen in comics, but yeah, that's what happened. He's dead.
Okay.
Not in this book. He still lives on. He lives on in my heart, Paul.
Powerpuff Girls number 7. I thought this was a really good companion to Stray Bullets.
Yes. Excellent.
It's very nihilistic. It ends on a note of hopelessness. It actually does.
It actually does end on a note of hopelessness.
Does it really?
It does.
It does. It's
a cliffhanger.
It's a Powerpuff Girls No More moment almost.
Can you guys explain to me?
I don't know anything about Powerpuff Girls or what they are, who they are, what they do. So you have to give me a primer.
So there are these three little girls who were created in a laboratory from Sugar, Spice, and Everything Nice.
Mm-hmm. And Chemical X.
They're sort of like the Metal Men.
Interesting.
And they have sort of the same, you know, relationship with the professor who created them. But Al, you go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Powerpuff Girls, I was a big fan of the cartoon. It was probably one of the first batch of Cartoon Network original programming.
Yeah.
When they first came on the air. They're these adorable little girls with superpowers.
And it's a great simple little design, sort of this kind of thing with really bold lines and.
Right, and there's kind of like there's Blossom, who is, they're probably all the same age, but I always think of her as the oldest one, and she's kind of the leader. And then there is Buttercup, who is my personal favorite because she's the brunette, but she's really scrappy and she's really tough. And she's very sarcastic. And then there is Bubbles, who is probably the most adorable. And she loves animals. And she has, like, the highest voice.
You know what? They're a little bit Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah, they are a little bit Josie and the Pussycats.
There's an analog for each of them. And so this is by Derek Charm, who did the story and art. And basically they find out that in Townsville, where they, you know, they protect the town, it's Monster Day, and all the big kaiju are coming from Monster Island, basically, and they're going to attack the town. And by the end of it, they realize that there are just way too many monsters. There's wave after wave, and no matter what they do, the monsters keep on coming. And they decide, you know what? We're going to wait till Monster Day's over. We're going to come back and clean up. And so they're like, at the end, they're all beaten and bruised, and they say, so it's decided. We're giving up. And it's like Allie said, it's sort of Spider-Man No More kind of moment, walking through the alleyway. And a cliffhanger until next time. This looks just like the cartoon, and it's beautiful.
I think they really did a good job of translating the colors and some of the art for comics as opposed to for the animation. So, like, the colors are a lot more textured, which I like.
The backgrounds are really interesting.
And I'm assuming that... Derek Charm did the colors too, because there's no colorist listed.
Yeah.
They just have him as story and art.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, and it's a really good translation from animation to comic, which I know can sometimes be a little bit difficult. But, I mean, it perfectly captures that tone of the cartoon. I mean, I think really the only difference is in the cartoon, like, you'd have, like, two episodes in one 30-minute slot.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept them really short. So I feel like if this was an episode of Powerpuff Girls, it would have been, like, completed at the end.
Yeah, I thought it was a funny script. I thought it was well written. Some of these are you know, there's a lot of cartoon adaptations lately, and you know, I think there's some that are better than others. Like, you know, Adventure Time, I think, is an example of a good one that captures the tone of the series. This one does.
Yeah.
And then there are some lesser ones, which I
who publishes this one?
IDW.
Well, yeah. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the books that we wanted to talk about, and let's do an audience question, which is actually associated with this very subject.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, guys. My name is Kyle. I'm from Canada, Winnipeg, to be more specific. But I thought I'd call and just, I guess, ask a question and just to mention one thing, or more accurately, thank you, guys. I lost my eyesight, or the majority of my eyesight, when I was in about grade 5. So I was unable to read comics until the iPad recently came out a few years ago, and I'm able to read them now. But in between that point, your podcast was what basically get me informed on comics. And so you guys gave up your time to do those sort of things. And for people like me, it was much appreciated. So I just want to say thank you for that. Now that I read comics again, though, because I can somewhat see them, I just wanted to ask you guys a question. I've noticed as of late, a lot of the cartoons that have come out have been, you know, like Young Justice, which has been really good. And then fans have seemed to react negatively to some things like Ultimate Spider-Man or Teen Titans Go and that kind of stuff. Now, my daughter, who's 6, and my other daughter, who is 4, love things like Teen Titans Go. It's one of their favorite shows. But a lot of the fans seem to find it frustrating or annoying or think it's silly, stupid, what have you. And it got me thinking that fans that don't seem to get the fact that these younger aimed shows are what make young kids into comic fans and will keep the industry going. Do you think that comic book fans in general, if this segment does represent the general group, does more of a detriment to the art or to the longevity of comics in general? Or do you think I'm just sort of crazy? All right. Thanks, guys.
So I'm glad, Kyle, that you've been able to, A, read comics again, and B, that we've been able to help in any small way in your enjoyment of them.
Absolutely.
And it makes things like that are really great to hear, and it helps keep us going. But let's get to your larger point, which is animation. And you basically hit many nails on the head with one fell swoop, and that is that a lot of, you know, there aren't comics in newsstands, there aren't comics really in supermarkets except for Archie. And yeah, it used to be the way that a lot of kids found comics. And these days, I think the strategy appears to be that Marvel and DC are going for kids in the animation world, at least on the, you know, weekly series, you know, with Ultimate Spider-Man and Avengers Assemble and Teen Titans Go all being squarely aimed at the 4 to 8 bracket, which is what we've been told. And they are. That's, if you watch them, they're aimed at younger kids. And you were right that the adult fans get mad because adult fans don't like when anything that their characters aren't aimed at them.
There's this sort of completionist thing where Right. It's like, it has Batman in it. I got to have it. It's got to be for me. So if it's not for their demographic, they can lash out sometimes and be like, this is silly. This is not for me. But there's so much other Batman for you.
And the thing that Kyle said is absolutely right. His daughter loves it because she is the target audience. And that's great that she loves it, because that is how a lot of kids get into these characters, through licensed material like toys and stuff, and through these cartoons. And that's how these characters are going to live on.
I feel like there's been some really – this is going to sound not how I want it to sound. But there's been some really great animation that has kind of worked either for all ages or for – the older demographic of comic fans.
Mm-hmm.
That is wonderful. But at the same time, I think, you know, we go into it and I think there are some fans who go into it and they're like, well, I want this to be like Bruce Timm's Justice League. And Teen Titans Go is not supposed to be that. And it's
awesome because it's not. Exactly. If everything was the same, it would be boring. I love the fact there's a comedic, goofy, you know, show that appeals. I think Teen Titans Go appeals to kids and adults.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good all ages kind of thing. Because it's something that I think a 4 and 6 year old would enjoy. And you know, their parents aren't going to be like, oh my God, what is that thing on in the background that I have to listen to? So I think it works, but, kind of exactly what Paul said. There's a lot of Batman for a lot of people, and you need Batman for kids.
These characters are strong enough to withstand many different interpretations, and one of them being a sort of sillier, more kid-friendly version. And look, kids can enjoy Bruce Timm stuff. I know for a fact my friend Scott's 4-year-old nephew loves the Bruce Timm Justice League cartoons and is constantly texting him, because kids that young apparently text. Or maybe maybe he's 6. Questions about the characters, in which he then turns to me and asks me the answers for that he doesn't know. He knows most of them, but not all of them. So they can enjoy that too, but they can also, you know, it's okay to have stuff aimed especially for them. And that's a lot of comic fans have problems with that because, as Paul said, they see these characters that they feel emotional ownership of, and they think everything has to be with those characters has to be for them, and it's just not.
Mm-hmm. But I also think, you know, we've got characters that are now 75 years old. There's mm-hmm. there's a lot of different versions of them, and I think you've got to be more accepting that they're, you know, someone's going to come along and do something completely different.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what the adults get? They get the comics, and they get the blockbuster summer movies, and they get Arrow, and they get Flash, and they get Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they get Constantine, and they get Gotham, and they get adults get a lot of stuff. So you can let the kids have the Saturday morning cartoons. That's what they're there for, anyway. Or I don't even know when they're on, but that's what I assume they're on.
But they're on all the time, man. DVR, right. You can watch whenever you want.
That's right, they don't even watch them Saturday mornings.
It's a 24-hour cartoon cycle.
So, Kyle, thank you very much for that voicemail. We appreciate it, and thanks for listening, and keep on reading. And I'm glad your daughter enjoys those cartoons very much. It makes me happy. And if you're like, you want to be like Kyle, you can leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOY-326-2697. You can, with your question, tell us who you are, where you're from. Keep it around 30 seconds. Kyle's was a little long, but it had a lot of good stuff to talk about, and so we used it. You can also email us at contact@ifanboy.com, and you can get your voice on the show. Have your opinions heard. We always like the audience questions. Those are always fun.
So, speaking of animation, remember that later on this month, Marvel is putting out Avengers Confidential, Black Widow, and Punisher. We'll be doing a special edition podcast on that, like we've been doing with the DC animated movies all this time. We because it looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Actually, it's available right now, like digital places, so you can watch it on iTunes, I think. But it comes out on disc on the 25th or something this month. So we'll be talking about it that week.
Yes.
Connor, what are you working on?
Well, if you're on social media, you saw that I tweeted out about a new video game that my company I work for has been working on for a while now, and it's finally sort of been announced. And you can find it at graygoo.graybox.com, and it's a new RTS game, which if you're a fan of those like StarCraft, it's going to be lots of fun. There's three different alien races, and you know, build a giant army and go at each other. So go to graygoo.graybox.com. Check that out if it's interesting to you. And if you follow me on Twitter and Facebook, I'll be posting things randomly.
The art looks great. The concept art stuff. There's Weta Workshop.
Concept art by Weta Workshop.
That's
beautiful.
Cool.
They did the character designs. They did the world designs. And Petroglyph, the studio behind Command & Conquer, did the game developing itself. So it's got, you know, looks fantastic. Great pedigree. So if you're an RTS fan.
It's got mechs.
Paul's very excited for the mech
love
action.
Them.
So
gobble them up.
Grey Goo comes out later this year. Comes out in the fall, but there'll be more news, you know, coming out pretty regularly until then.
Cool. Remember also fuzzytypewriter.com. You can check out our latest podcasts. What are we doing? We wrapped up True Detective. I'm so sorry that's over, but you can listen to our commentary on each and every one of those episodes. We're still talking about Justified, and I think we're going to be talking about the new Veronica Mars movie coming up. So check that out.
Ooh. Yeah. Head over to ifanboy.com to comment on this show, talk about this week's books, and also to find other podcasts like Paul mentioned. His Akira Talks Booksplodes are on there.
Yep.
The occasional Talksplodes. And you can also find the animation shows, all that stuff's at ifanboy.com.
Good month at ifanboy.com.
And you can follow the guys on Twitter at twitter.com/ifanboy or facebook.com/ifanboy to find out what the pick of the week is before the show is downloaded into your iTunes or however you listen to it. And you can follow us individually on Twitter at Wonder Alley, at KS Kilpatrick, and at Fuzzy Typewriter.
That's a C.S. Kilpatrick.
Oh. You're not Connor C
with a K?
O-N-N-O-R.
It's actually K O N N E R.
Damn it.
Yeah.
I need to go back to Sesame Street, apparently.
And just for completion's sake, J.A. Flanagan's Josh's, and we actually didn't create a Twitter account for his second son. Because
we did it with
the second son doesn't get anything good. He's gets a hand-me-down Twitter account. Hand-me-down Twitters.
Who knows if we'll even be using Twitter by the time
probably not.
Type in. Oh, my gosh. Okay, and finally, if you dig this sort of thing, you can write us a review on iTunes. We greatly appreciate that. Better yet, tell all the people you know about it. Go out on your roof, yell out the URL, short blurb of what it is, some of your favorite books, your favorite episodes. Let people know about it. Spread the love around.
So that's it for this week's show. Allie, thank you very much for coming on at short notice when Josh had his family edition. So thank you.
And thank you.
You did very well considering that you're actively drunk at this very moment.
You know, you do what you got to do. I learned it from listening to you, Connor.
Well, no one should do that. But I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Come on. We look forward to having you on again very soon. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Allie.
And I'm Paul.
Goodbye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.